You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 297 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, on this fine Thursday evening. I normally would come to you guys from the arena. I was in the building, but it's a little bit later than normal. I'm actually recording from home after I got home from the arena, so that's the reason why there is no background noise this time around. But it was a very, very interesting game at Phillips Arena when with the Hawks falling by a final score of 121-114. Kind of a brutal situation for the Hawks on paper, just because obviously if you heard the show yesterday, Dwayne Dedmon is going to be out 3 to 6 weeks with a stress reaction in his left tibia. And I would encourage people to listen to that podcast, but that was the backdrop of this thing, and the Hawks being a little bit shorthanded here. They did have the return of Luke Babbitt and Isaiah Taylor to help bridge the gap a little bit, but facing off against the Cavs, loaded with LeBron and company, not exactly the great situation in the world, but the Hawks did battle for 48 minutes here. They were in the game with about 2 minutes to go. And, I guess it would have been sort of miraculous if they had pulled out the victory very, very late in this game. But at the same time, they were certainly involved and all the way to the end here. And it was a very, very interesting game with that as a backdrop. So before we get into the individual stuff, I do want to break down a little bit of sort of, big picture game theory stuff and game production stuff in this game. John Collins was a the starting center in this contest, which is not exactly a big surprise. He's the only center really that's a reliable rotation option at this point in time. And he was starting center, but at the same time, he actually started the game and really played the majority of the game defensively, guarding guys like Jay Crowder and Jeff Green. The Hawks started with Luke Babbitt, who was returning in this game, taking on Kevin Love defensively. I asked Budenholzer after the game what that was sort of about, what the rationale was there, and he basically said that he wanted Collins as the weak side rim protector, wanted to keep him out of pick and roll, and that's something that you could definitely see, as well as some this is me saying this, but keeping him out of foul trouble could be beneficial as well there. But with that said, it was a little bit startling to see him having to guard guys like Jay Crowder on the perimeter. It's a good test for Collins in some ways, in that he's not used to doing that. So and it's something that he certainly will have to learn how to do more of in the future. So I did not mind at all seeing him play more out there, but that was something to follow away for the future, especially with as long as Dedmon is out. Against the Cavs, you can sort of get away with that a little bit because they don't have a ton of other options in the interior. Kevin Love is a very, very good rebounder, but offensively, a lot of his damage is down on the perimeter, et cetera, et cetera. It was a matchup where it's a challenge in some ways for Atlanta when they have to go a little bit smaller, but at the same time, they're able to do that because Cleveland's never playing two traditional bigs really at any point. So that's something to sort of monitor and take away from this game. And that standpoint, early on, the story of the game was defensively. The Hawks just could not get any stops. In the first quarter, the Cavs had a 160.3 defensive offensive rating in that first quarter. And the Cavs shot 67% from the floor and 6 of 8 from 3 in the first 12 minutes. That was basically setting the tone for what was going to be to come. That was, of course, the biggest culprit for Atlanta's defense kind of being porous in this game. 42 points in that first quarter for the Cavs. Fortunately, Atlanta did score 35 points and kept things up in the first quarter offensively. And that was able to actually, the Hawks led, I was going to say here, a 23-9 opening run in the second quarter for the Hawks to take the lead. They actually led by as many as 9 before halftime. And then from there, it was sort of a back-and-forth affair. It looked briefly in the first quarter like they were just going to be unable to get any stops in this game altogether, and that did not end up being the case. They ended up getting a little bit better defensively. For the game, the numbers still look pretty porous. A 125.6 defensive rating. The Cavs shot 52% from the floor and 46% from 3. They had 30 assists, including 12 from LeBron James. Actually, it was kind of amusing and something you definitely would not normally hear from a coach after that, but Mike Budenholzer was actually, at least in his words after the game, was actually fairly pleased with the defense, which is a startling thing to hear, again, with all those numbers as the backdrop and 121 points. Even if you're not a fan of the advanced metrics, that's a lot of points to be giving up in a basketball game that was not an incredibly fast pace. At the same time, you know, Bud's points were valid. You know, a lot of that's just the Cavs making plays that are virtually unstoppable, especially LeBron's passing was sort of out of control. He shot 8 of 11 in this game as well, being just uber efficient. You know, defensively, it certainly would have helped for the Hawks to get him some more passing lanes and contest some more shots. But I don't think they were quite as bad defensively as the numbers would indicate. With that said, you know, it's kind of frustrating to watch, to sort of knowing that they're going to be unable to get any real stops here. So, yeah, it was frustrating, but it did improve after the first quarter, and even though the numbers were really, really, really bad in the early going of this game. Other things to hit on before we get into some individual stuff. Dennis Schroeder was so good in the first half carving up Jose Calderon that it forced the Cavs to go with LeBron defensively on Schroeder. In fact, Calderon did not start the second half in the lineup. The Cavs went without a point guard at the start of the second half. Calderon did play a little bit after halftime, but it was mostly big lineups, and that featured a lot of LeBron guarding Dennis Schroeder, which a good friend of the program, K.L. Schnarr, pointed out. It's probably not the greatest sign for Cleveland long-term, and they're having to put LeBron as a stopper on a point guard in a game in November. You know, part of that's due to the fact that Cleveland doesn't have a whole lot of other options right now. You know, Derrick Rose, who's already sort of a bad defender anyway, is out of the lineup. Isaiah Thomas as well. And even Amon Shumpert, who would be their normal de facto bigger guy to throw on a point guard, is also not in the lineup. So LeBron did that. He was able to slow Schroeder down quite a bit, but still not what you would like to see if you're the Cavs. But that move did work, even though Dennis had a big game, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. You know, in the second half, the Cavs set the tone in a big way with an 8-0 run to start the second half. The Hawks did battle back a little bit, but then a 12-2 run by the Cavs sort of put the game away finally for good. Although, you know, Atlanta did return to competency and some competitiveness in the fourth quarter. The Hawks were within 1 point in the final couple of minutes. Dennis Schroeder wasn't able to. He actually had a fairly open pull-up jumper in the lane, but a 12-footer that would have given the Hawks the lead and ended up being short on the other end. LeBron knocked down a three that was basically the dagger. If you look back in retrospect, that was basically the biggest swing of the game, was that 5-point potential swing with Schroeder missing and then LeBron making what was a bizarrely bizarre is probably the wrong word, a definitely something that it's a LeBron shot. Let's just say that it's probably the easiest way to put it. A LeBron shooting situation that you would not expect most people to take and make, and LeBron is the best player in the world for a reason. Before we get into the individual stuff, I do want to tell you guys and remind you guys to subscribe to the podcast. It would really be appreciated by me if you guys would do that. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play, TuneIn Radio, whatever you like to listen to podcasts at. Also, every single episode, barring the short episode for the Dwayne Edmund, I did not do a full post on that, but I was going to say every single episode of the podcast is also a post on PeachtreeHoops.com if you guys are frequently checking that site out, the site that I edit and write for. So please do that as well. And thank you, as always, for subscribing and telling your friends about the program. With that said, we can get into the player situation here. And, we teased a couple of things already, but we'll start with the bench on this fine evening. This is we've not talked about this guy just yet. This is the best game of the season by far for Ersan Ilyasova. 22 points, had 4 steals, 3 rebounds, was a +4. And again, the Hawks lost by 7 points. Played 30 minutes. I've said this a lot this season, but I think it's worth driving the point home now. This is just a different team when they have Ilyasova playing at a healthy level. You know, you're not going to be expecting him to put up 22 points on a nightly basis, but just having at least a fringe level starting power forward around is very, very important. You know, he did not start in this game. Babbitt started and was okay. We'll hit on that in a second. But Ilyasova playing very well is a valuable thing. You know, defensively, he's underrated. He actually played against LeBron at some points in this game. It's not exactly the best matchup for Atlanta by any means, but he's competitive in that setting. He shot the ball well here, made 4 of 6 from 3, 8 of 11 from the floor, and it's a big difference with the Hawks overall when he is playing well. Elsewhere, Marco Bellinelli had a big game as well. 18 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. He was 4 of 9 from the floor, 2 of 5 from 3, and a blistering 8 of 9 from the free throw line. Bellinelli's defense, never great, but at the same time, offensively, he did enough here to where that's definitely worth having him on the court when he's shooting the ball like that and playing and being efficient, creating for others as well. 5 assists, second on the team in assists in this game. The Hawks only had 24 as a team, but you know, when you pick up 5 from Marco and a secondary ball handling role, that's very valuable. Bit players, so we list for players in this game. Isaiah Taylor played 15 minutes. He did not score, but actually was a net equal, was a 0 net rating in this game. I thought he was much better. He played really two stints in this game. It was a 7-minute stint in the first half and a 8-minute stint in the second half. He was much better in the second half. I was actually going to be planning to talk about, had a couple of notes about how rusty he looked in the first half. And the second half, that kind of went away a little bit. It's not the greatest game in the world from Taylor in the spot, but still, he looked the part as a backup point guard. You know, before the game, I asked Blood if that was the plan to start, not start Taylor, but to have him in that role as the pure backup point guard, and that ended up being the case here. Malcolm Delaney did not play at all. Near the Josh Majette, who had been the backup point guard the last two games. So Taylor is, immediately back in that role. And he looked to be, again, was not great here, but he was not awful either after a couple of little shaky moments early on. And he seems to be firmly inserted as the backup point guard whenever he is healthy. Both Tyler Cavanaugh and Miles Plumlee were very, very peripheral pieces here. I'm actually a little bit surprised that Cavanaugh did not play more. Or a lot of that was probably Ilyasova playing as well as he did. But Cavanaugh, 5 minutes, missed both of his shots. Had two assists, though. Was minus 10, the worst number for the Hawks. And Plumlee played only one stint. It was a 4-minute stint. He did have a rebound, was plus 7, sort of an anonymous. Again, he's now played twice in a row in some bit roles, although this game he did play in the competitive portion, but just sort of an anonymous performance from Plumlee. He's just kind of out there when he's playing, not killing you in anything, really, especially if you had him in certain matchups. There was a little bit of fear on my end when he... when he came in, the Cavs immediately substituted, and he had to sort of guard guys he probably doesn't want to be guarding. It's not a great matchup for Miles Plumlee, knowing that the Cavs aren't really playing any traditional bigs right now without Tristan Thompson available in the lineup. So, yeah, just file that away for the future. But Plumlee, will probably be appearing at least once every game until Mike Muscala comes back, at the very least, and no sign of him appearing anytime very, very soon. Although I guess he could, but he was firmly ruled out for this game, so... it'd be nice to have him around, but he's not back just yet. Lastly on the bench, DeAndre Bembry, 21 minutes, played at 7 points, did have 4 turnovers, which is not what you want to see. Had four fouls, had to do a guard LeBron James at points in the second half, had 2 assists, 2 rebounds. You saw some positives from DeAndre. You also saw the negatives with him, his free throw shooting. He actually made 1 of 2, but neither one of those shots looked great here, and he's not exactly a perimeter threat when it comes to shooting jump shots. But you see his facilitation ability offensively and his defense. You know, he's overmatched against LeBron just by a pure size perspective. But DeAndre is a very, very good defensive player when he's locked in, and especially when you're talking about matchups that he can actually manage to accomplish, which is most players. You know, LeBron's an unfair matchup for most players in the league. And, with Bembry, that's sort of the same thing. But he's very, very good against opposing guards. And I thought he played relatively well here despite some lackluster numbers overall, and the turnovers are a point of concern as well. Elsewhere in the starting lineup, Kent Bazemore, 7 points, 6 assists, 2 steals, they have 5 turnovers. A largely innocuous performance from Bazemore. I didn't think he was awful, but defensively, there were some times where he was, there was some lost cohesion moments. Mike Budenholzer took some time to ream him as a timeout was coming together during this game in a pretty visible fashion. And then Baze spent most of that time talking with Charles Lee, the assistant coach for the Hawks. But I didn't think he was awful. Some defensive stuff, though, and offensively, just not the greatest game in the world for sure. I mean, for Bazemore, did not have the ball in his hands a lot either, though. And that's sort of a change from the recent past where he's had the ball and a lot of creation responsibilities. Torian Prince, 12 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, had played 28 minutes, was 4 of 12 from the floor. A couple of out-of-control type of things for Torian in the same way that he has had a bunch of those this year, and then defensively a couple of the trouble spots as well. You know, him trying to guard LeBron is interesting. That's something that we talked about really since he's been drafted, the fact that Torian actually has more size than your normal Hawksy type of player in the last couple of years. He's bigger than Tabasov Oloshe. He's bigger than Damari Carroll was. He's bigger than Kent Bazemore, obviously. But still, you know, Torian, when you could see him paired with LeBron in the post area, you could tell just how much bigger LeBron actually is than Torian. He was able to out-muscle the youngster a little bit here. There's no shame in that. Again, LeBron is basically unguardable. At the same time, I did not think that Torian played particularly well. His effort sort of waned at various moments in this game, and that was a little bit troubling based on the opponent, because you'd think you'd be up for this particular game. Still, it wasn't like he was awful, just a couple of moments where he was less than spectacular. Luke Babbitt, only 18 minutes, had 8 points and 2 assists. I was, again, surprised that he didn't play more, but again, you know, Ilyasova played very well, and that's sort of the minutes, you know, those guys actually ended up playing together a little bit in the front court. The Hawks did go with Tyler Cavanaugh as the first center, quote-unquote, off the bench, but he didn't play a lot, so it was a lot of John Collins, of course, but aside from that, it was some small ball lineups with Ilyasova and Babbitt. playing together at times. And yeah, not the greatest in terms of successful defensive lineups there. But Babbitt was okay in his limited time here. John Collins, again, as I mentioned, I should mention now, that we don't know a whole lot about this at this point. If you're listening to this late on the day on Friday, it's important to note that I do not know much about this. I'm recording this about, near the midnight hour on Thursday night. But John Collins left this game with about 4 minutes to go with a left shoulder injury. That's all the Hawks are saying at this point in time about Collins' injury. I've seen the replay a couple times now. It's tough to tell just how bad it could be. And my Budenholzer did not have any additional light to shed. And the Hawks are going to be careful about the way that they describe it, I'm sure. And again, they could have released some more information by the time you listen to this on Friday. But as of now, we don't know a whole lot about that. Obviously, fingers crossed, Collins is the centerpiece right now in terms of the intrigue of this roster. They need him to be good. But more importantly, they need him to be available and healthy. So hopefully that's not as bad as it could be. And we'll keep you guys updated with that. But in terms of his on-court performance in this game, 13 points and 7 rebounds in 26 minutes. He got beat up a little bit on the interior by Kevin Love. Some what you could either call crafty or maybe a little bit dirty from Love. A couple of pulls and scrapes and arm bars, that kind of stuff from Love, who's a very, very crafty rebounder. He got the best of Collins a couple times. As I mentioned, I thought it was very interesting, again, that he was not guarding Love at the beginning of this game, or really much of this game. But Collins played okay. There was a couple of highlight spots, as there normally are with John. I don't think he was awesome, but again, I don't think he was bad either. And some quality minutes with six of seven from the floor. May's only free throw attempt, and have 4 offensive rebounds that were really helpful in this game for Atlanta. Lastly, Dennis Schroeder, 27 points, 5 assists, and 2 turnovers for Dennis. He was -7 in 33 minutes, but 11 of 19 from the floor. He absolutely carved up Jose Calderon in the first half. Had 17 points on 12 shots and really got wherever he wanted to go. Was a little bit slowed down by LeBron in the second half, but whenever he was guarded or even in the area of Jose Calderon, you could tell his eyes sort of light up there. A lot of this Calderon being as bad as you might imagine him being defensively. But still, Dennis being able to take advantage of that is encouraging, and his defensive issues that are usually magnified were not quite as bright in this game. Part of that is the fact that Cleveland hasn't really had that kind of point guard take advantage of him in the same way that a lot of other teams do. But yeah, there's that on Dennis, and 27 points and 5 assists, nothing to sneeze at here, even in a favorable matchup. And his offense is really what kept the Hawks in the game in the first half, because normally if you're going to be allowing a 160 offensive rating for an entire quarter, you're going to be in deep trouble. But Dennis scoring a bunch of points and engineering an efficient offense was really helpful in that way, and not really the game that you want to kill him. There are games where I'm more negative on Schroeder. I didn't think he was like the best player in the world or anything in this game, but I didn't think he played. He did play quite well offensively and wasn't brutal, at least in the same way that he has been a couple of times this season on the defensive end of the floor. With that said, it's probably going to be it on today's podcast. Barring some sort of massive development with John Collins' injury, this will be the last podcast of the week. The Hawks are not back in action until Saturday in Brooklyn. We'll do a podcast after that game that will operate as the Monday show, and that's sort of standard operating procedure here. If you're a new listener, I really thank you guys for coming aboard. But we normally take the weekends off, quote unquote, unless there are games, of course, and then we'll recap those for our next show after that. So I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Hopefully, fingers crossed again for John Collins' injury stuff, and we'll keep an eye on that, of course. And follow along at peacetroops.com if you guys will do that as well. That's probably the fastest way. And if something is worthy, we'll break in with an emergency podcast as soon as I'm able on Friday, because it's, of course, a work day for me and my regular job. So, stay tuned for that. Thanks, as always, for listening, everybody, and we'll see you guys. If not anything over the weekend, we'll see you guys on Monday.